The following is Katie Deaney's talk, Applying Value-Sensitive Design Principles to User Engagement, from the 2012 Information Architecture Summit. The 2012 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by User Interface Engineering and the UIE Virtual Seminar Program. Stay tuned after the podcast for a special offer from UIE.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Deaney. I'm from WebMD Health Services in Portland, Oregon. I'm here today to talk to you about how we can apply value-sensitive design principles to user engagement. The first thing I want to say is that the ideas in this and the methodologies are the ideas of other people, most notably Batya Friedman and Peter Kahn, who are professors in the Master of Science of Information Management program at the University of Washington. If you're interested in value-sensitive design and some of the issues that I talk about today, I highly recommend you go to the vsdesign.org website. You can sort of drink from the fire hose of information about value-sensitive design. One of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this here at the summit is that it's a methodology that's been applied a lot in academia, in government, and in the nonprofit sector, but it hasn't been applied a lot in corporate or business environments, and I'm kind of interested in how it can be applied. So it's a process I'm trying to work into in my own organization, and as I'm gradually doing it, I'm thinking about this more and how it can be done. I just wanted to share that with you. So first thing I want to talk about is user engagement. So there seems to be a lot of things in organization that I've found, both working in agencies and working in corporations, where there's a lot of understood value about certain parts of the products or the services or the offerings that we work on as UX, interaction, or IA designers. Visual communication has clear value, I think. A feature set has a very clear value. Data and the back-end supporting processes often are seen to have a very clear value. And we as practitioners understand user experience and understand its value, but a lot of times it's not measurable. And I think if we think about creating an engagement layer for people to interact with these other pieces that are valued, it can help us to get that value of what we do across. And I think that the biggest thing about engagement is that it can be measured. You can measure how people are engaging with your offering. User experience, it's really difficult to measure what that engagement level is. Part of that is because user experience is contextual and each person comes in with a different context. And because of that context, they will have a different experience. You can't create the experience for them. You can hope for an experience, but you can actually design for engagement. And so that's why I'm using the term engagement instead of user experience. So if we know what the values are of our intended audiences, we have a much better chance of engaging them in meaningful ways. So a lot of times when we're doing something, we may have a lot of research, but we may not look at what the values are of the different audiences that may be interacting with the work we do. And I think that if we know that, we can help create things that will be more compelling and more interesting and get more use. So let's talk about values a little bit. Values are difficult. I'm going to give you an example that who here has been through an office renovation at their job or has changed from one office to another where there was a big difference in the way things were set up, right? So a lot of times right now, especially with the recession, companies are going towards an office layout where you have very small cubicles with low walls and small spaces, and then there's collaborative spaces to work in. Are you familiar with this concept? And typically what you're losing when you change from that is either a larger office or more privacy. And what is happening here, and what a lot of the change management issue is with this, is that there's different value sets that are being served. So typically the organization wants there to be more transparency, more collaboration, and greater efficiency. The employees may value those same things, but employees tend to also value their privacy, and they may feel that they're more productive or more effective instead of being more efficient when they're in a larger space or a more private space. So it's difficult to balance these different values. You can't always have everything, but sometimes if you think about it, you can get most of what you need, or you can at least mitigate the change so that people feel more comfortable with the values that they're having to not have emphasized as much. I'm going to give you a little exercise just to illustrate how difficult values can be sometimes. So this is a list of values, and you can go on the internet. There's all kinds of lists of values compiled. You know, you can get up to 300 words on a list, and these can be helpful if you want to run a workshop doing this. But I just gave you a short list, and what I'd like you to do is pick five of these values, just to yourself, there's no right or wrong answers, that resonate with you, either on a personal level or something you're doing in your work or something in society that you think is important. And think about that context that you're thinking of also as you're picking these out. And I'll give you a minute to think about that. And if you want to nod or give me a half hand or whatever when you've sort of got there, that would be helpful. Okay, people are, okay, great. So the next thing I want you to do is eliminate four of those five that you just picked. So this is sort of deciding what your core value is, right? And this can be difficult. Something that may help you if you're having a difficult time doing this is change the context. If you were thinking about something at work, maybe it was helpful to eliminate by thinking of what would happen, which value would you treasure the most if your family was suddenly in poverty, or if someone became extremely ill, or if there was a war. It changes what you may think your most important value is. You guys got your core value? So you see how difficult that is to kind of really, a lot of these things are very important to all of us, right? And changing the context, did you guys notice that that also kind of changed how you thought about the value? Okay. So the main thing from that I want you to take is that values are contextual. This is actually a great ad campaign. If any of you spend a lot of time in airports, you've probably seen it. It's for HSBC Bank, and they've taken photographs. There are these very large ads that are on the sides of the hallways in airports, but it's pictures of different things, and then it's got different words overlaid on it, and it shows how values can be contextual. So in this image, we have a suburban-looking white woman with four children, and sort of depending on your context, you may see this as being a privilege or a sacrifice, or you may see her as a role model, or you may see her as all three or none. But depending on your context or your frame of reference, it's going to affect how you see this. So recognizing tensions between values, it's going to help surface potential pitfalls or problems in a design before you've gone down the path of designing. So I look at this as being something that helps inform design strategy. And of course, if you're working in an iterative process, it's something you can examine as you're moving through that. An example of tensions, so imagine for a moment that you are working on a service or offering that maybe sells these types of prayer rugs. So depending on who your audience is, this could be seen as a piece of decor or a souvenir, or it could be a very sacred place of prayer. And if you don't know who your audience is or what they value, you could get this really wrong. So now I'm going to go through the actual value-sensitive design methodology, and we're going to take a hypothetical example. Well, it's actually a real-world example, but we're going to hypothetically pretend we can go back in time and rethink it. So I really think that, and what I'm trying to explore here, is that applying value-sensitive design methods to practice will help create more effective user engagement through design. That's my hope. So does anybody know about the South by Southwest homeless hotspots? Raise your hand. Okay, so most of you know about this. So this guy is Melvin, and he was one of 13 people in Austin during the South by Southwest Festival, which I think just finished, or is one of the aspects still going on. Anyway, this just happened, basically. And they're from the Front Steps Shelter in Austin, who helped coordinate this with BBH, which is an agency. And what they did is they took 13 people, it was 12 men and one woman, and they gave them $20 a day to stand around in front of the convention on the sidewalks holding a MiFi device, which is a portable wireless router, and people could interact with these homeless people and pay for wireless service. There was a recommended donation of $2 for every 15 minutes, but you could pay as much as you wanted to. You had to pay something, but you could pay as much as you wanted to. And basically, this created a huge media firestorm. Like, People, blogs blew up about it. The mainstream media picked up on it. I thought this quote was really funny because it sort of encompassed all of this feedback, which is, homeless hotspots, the best, worst, smartest, dumbest part of South by Southwest. The biggest issue that people seem to hone in on again and again was, this is the text that was on the t-shirt, which is, I'm, for instance, Katie, a 4G hotspot, right? So the t-shirt was turning a human being into a piece of infrastructure. And this seemed to be sort of the lightning rod around which all of this negative attention was going. So what I'd like to do is go through and apply a value-sensitive design methodology to this project that BBH did at South by Southwest so you can see how to apply this methodology to problems. And we can pretend that we've gone back in time and maybe we can learn some things through this so that we could design it in a way that it wouldn't be so controversial. Unless we value controversy. I am curious to know, just because it's so divided, people have strong opinions, I'm actually sort of in the middle, but who is very strongly against this and thinks it's dehumanizing and was a terrible idea? Okay, and yeah, I know that. And then who thinks that this is really an innovative, interesting idea and may point the way of the future towards helping disadvantaged populations? Okay, and then who sort of feels, yeah. Yeah, it's fraught with some issues. So we'll go through and see what we can find. And I would love, because I typically do this in a workshop format, it's usually more of a discussion. This is a presentation, so I've got things filled out, but I would love to hear, feel free to shout things out, or if you want to go to the mic and add something to what I've got, I'd love to have a discussion about this. So I'm going to go through the 6 steps that we're going to do. The first one is identifying the value, the technology, and the context of use that we're working with. The second one is to identify direct and indirect stakeholders. The third step is to then take those indirect and direct stakeholders and identify benefits and harms for each group. The fourth is to take those benefits and harms and map those onto corresponding value terms. Then you can take the value terms and investigate where there are potential conflicts between values. And then hopefully at the end, the last step is that you take this information and you can integrate these value considerations into your design strategy. So for this, I actually, to choose the value, I went through BBH's press releases about this because I wanted to get at what they said they were trying to do through this. Somebody may, you know, if you're cynical, you may think this is media spin, but they claim that the value that they were getting at was empowerment for these people. The technology here is wireless access. That's an easy one to figure out. The context of use is very interesting because there's a huge juxtaposition here. The context of use is both homelessness and it's South by Southwest attendees and South by Southwest itself. And those are two very, very different contexts, right? South by Southwest is sort of a huge party. There's a lot of information. There's a lot of people who you'd consider pretty privileged there, and homelessness is kind of the exact opposite of that. So I'd love to hear from you. Direct stakeholders are people who are the most affected by the design work that you're going to be doing. So in this case, the most direct stakeholders, I think, are homeless participants. Does anybody want to give me, who else do you think is a direct stakeholder in this? Yes, John. Conference attendees. Ta-da! Huh? Yes, survey says correct. Who else is a direct stakeholder in this? And this is where things get interesting, because you can argue that they are. You could also say that they're indirect stakeholders because they're not directly using the service. I guess if you're hanging out in front of the conference, you could use it. Yeah. Mike? The service provider? That was actually something I actually put as an indirect because they weren't involved in negotiating or part of the design, but they could be direct. Again, this is not an exact science at all, so that's not a bad one. Anybody else? The ad agency. Oh, the homeless shelter and the ad agency. So these are the ones that I picked for this, but I think that the service provider is a valid one. I think saying the community in Austin is valid as well. Any other ideas or anything that I don't have up here for direct stakeholders that comes to mind? Nope. Okay. So that's the direct stakeholders we'll work with for this exercise. And then indirect stakeholders. So Mike, you said wireless provider, and you said Austin community. What else? Who else is an indirect stakeholder in this? That's a potential one, absolutely, yeah. I don't have them on here, but, Conference organizers. The conference organizers themselves could be an indirect stakeholder. Yes? Absolutely correct, yes. And that was one I did not identify. I'll show you the ones. But we can talk through more. So I had the Austin community, homeless people as a general population, advocacy groups, and the wireless provider. But I think also the sponsors, the conference organizers, I think all of those are definitely other. What other ones can we think of? Larger interactive community, absolutely. We're sitting here having this discussion right now at an information architecture summit. So it's definitely something that people are talking about. I think one thing about indirect stakeholders that can get tricky is I think it's good to surface a lot of them, and then you probably want to narrow down the focus a little bit, because potentially, especially depending on what you're working on, you could say everybody's an indirect stakeholder. So while you want to keep in mind as many groups as possible, it's helpful to focus it or have a grouping of maybe, you know, you could probably go up to maybe 10 of these and still have an effective workshop around it. But if it gets too much, it becomes difficult to do. So the next step is to benefits and harms for each stakeholder group. So the homeless participants, this is an example. They get to work with the public for 4 days. This is a benefit. They're earning money. They're talking to people. They're being seen. A harm is that after 4 days, this goes away, they give the MiFi away, they can't continue selling the service, there's no further support for them. So, what's a benefit for the South by Southwest attendees? Wireless, exactly. Wireless service on demand. What's a potential harm? Discomfort with a social problem. I like feeling icky, that works, Bram. What about for the homeless shelter? What's a potential benefit for them? Awareness. Yep, increased awareness. Is that what I put? Oh no, helping tenants earn money. So there's, you can see for a lot of these, you'll have a lot of benefits or a lot of harms. What's a potential harm for the shelter? Public perception. Absolutely, yes. 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 That was dehumanizing the problem. Remember, I got to say this for the mic. Dehumanizing the problem, and what was? Yes, taking advantage of a resource that isn't theirs. That's correct. I do want to say all the money did end up going to the homeless people themselves, but the shelter was responsible for limiting the amount of money that each person could earn, because they were concerned if they earned too much money that they wouldn't be responsible with it. So that's another interesting value tension. I had put there's no infrastructure for them to continue the program, but any of the things you said is just as valid, and in a workshop you would want to list all of these things. For the ad agency, what's the benefit? Publicity, yeah, absolutely. Anything else? I don't think they received any payment for this. It was part of their labs group. But there has been some talk about they want to create documentaries around. I think there's some thought that this would turn into something that would make money at some point. So I had put media attention and brand awareness for the ad agency, and harm is that they're going to be extremely criticized, which they were. Any other harms that you guys can think of for this? Anyone? Okay. Loss of clients, yeah, potentially. If you have a client and you're an agency and your client's not into controversy, this may make you decide to move towards a different agency. Absolutely, yes. That's a really good point, because agencies' talent pool is really a competitive thing. And if you feel uncomfortable with the work this agency is doing, you might decide to look somewhere else for a job. That's a really good point. Okay, so now those are the direct stakeholders, and these are the indirect stakeholders. So for the Austin community, what are benefits potentially? Yeah? That's a really good point. Right, so it's taking people who are not currently contributing to the community and giving them a potential to contribute both with money and be part of the economy and just be part of the larger community. That's great. What other benefits to the community? Yeah, potentially if you have an issue around crime and homelessness and there's a causal relationship there, absolutely, yeah. Yes, it absolutely could make them a target. That would be a potential harm for the participants, right? Or do you mean something, am I understanding your meaning? That the participants could become a target for crime? Is that, yeah. And that could affect the whole community. I see what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. So I had put down positive interactions with homeless people. So. And then negative attention about the problem. Austin actually, from my understanding, has a huge homeless problem, and this has put a lot more attention on it, which could be seen as harmful for the community and for tourism. And then the homeless communities at large, I think one huge benefit is that it creates awareness, right? People are talking to other, you know, are talking to homeless people that they wouldn't normally be doing. What other benefits? Yes. Absolutely, interacting with people. And if people know the stories of these people from the hotspots, and all of them are sort of stories where there was an event or there was a small change that happened in their lives and they just sort of lost control of their housing situation for whatever reason, these people are not people who have drug or alcohol or mental problems. And I think for a lot of people, learning about these people's stories changed their perception about the homeless. So creating awareness, I think, is really important. What's a potential harm to the homeless community at large? Oh, what the shelter's concern was that there would be a problem with learning responsibility with money if too much money was earned in too short of a period of time. That's an interesting idea, yeah. I had listed that it doesn't create sustainable change, right? There's a change, but it's not solving the problem long term, and it can't solve the problem for all people who are homeless. Well, okay, so the last two ones, advocacy groups and the wireless carrier. What benefits to advocacy groups? More awareness, yeah? They put potentially inspire new programs, get other people who are working with technology involved with advocacy groups in other areas of the country doing a program like this or a program that also uses technology to help these people. Potential harm is that it highlights the complexity of the problem. That's part of what came out of this whole media firestorm, is that this problem is a really complex problem. It's not easy to solve. You can't just do a cool thing for 4 days and walk away and expect a problem to be fixed. So if it's highlighting the complexity of the problem too much, people might shy away from trying to solve it. And the wireless carrier, I'm interested to hear what you guys think. I was sort of thinking about this. They're getting brand equity out of this potentially, right? But there's a potential negative brand association, especially if it flops or if they maybe don't want to be associated with homeless people selling their service on the street for whatever reason. So there's a potential benefit and harm there to a wireless carrier, which I think was Verizon in this case, but does anybody remember for sure? Anyway, any other benefits or harms to the wireless carrier? Yeah.
One potential harm, here's how to Mm-hmm. And
it doesn't work. Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I haven't actually been to South by Southwest, but I've heard that this whole wireless thing is actually a huge problem. Okay, so the next thing we're going to do is we're going to take those benefits and harms we just went through, and we're going to map them with value terms. So again, a PowerPoint is not the most ideal format to do this in. Hopefully you would be working on a whiteboard or sitting down at a table with a group of people with big sheets of paper or using sticky notes, but we've got PowerPoint for now. So I'm just going to overlay the values on the benefits and harms. So I'll show you the first one, and then you guys can help me with the other ones. I think that just based on this set of benefits and harms, of course, there would be more potentially if you went through this exercise. I saw the values here as being engagement, earning, humanization, and the harm brought up the issue of, so there's no ongoing support, so the value there is stability, right? There's no stability to it. It could also be sustainability. There's a lot of values that you can use that have synonyms, and you can list, when you're doing this as an exercise, you want to list all of them out and surface as much of this as possible. So for the attendees, what do you think the values are here for the benefit and for the harm, or either or? What value words would you ascribe to those? Convenience, absolutely. Convenience is a great one. Being able to check Twitter on demand whenever you need it. Ah. Anything else? Anything with that harm? Is there a value with that feeling icky, as Bram said? Respect? That's a really good value to incorporate in this. Yes. Anything else? Okay. So I had put down access and comfort as two values that I thought were contained in those benefits and harms. What about for the homeless shelter? So helping tenants earn money and the harm being no infrastructure to continue the program. What are the values there? Kindness, that's great, yeah. Sustainability, yes. Compassion, yes, absolutely. I put down empowerment and philanthropy and maintainability. So again, you can see there's some overlap in terms here, right? And for the ad agency, what values can we ascribe to what they're up to? Ambition, that's a good one. Earlier, someone had said in the front row, publicity, that could be a value. I had put fame and notoriety. So for the Austin community, what are the values here that map to the benefits and the harms? So a value for positive interactions with the homeless and a value for negative attention about the problem. Empathy, yes, absolutely. Anything else? I'd put change and maintain the status quo, which you can see there's a tension right there within one stakeholder group. And that happens often, especially as you list out more and more of these. It's not only tensions between stakeholder groups, but there's tensions within stakeholder groups. For the homeless, we're creating awareness, but this doesn't create sustainable change. What values are attached to that potentially? Hope. That's great. Hope was exactly what I put. And sustainability, which you mentioned earlier, right? And for advocacy groups, benefits inspiring new programs, harms highlighting the complexity of the problem. And I had put innovation and encouragement, but there's other values that are attached to those things as well. And for the wireless carrier, the benefit of brand equity or a potential negative brand association, I felt like these values were very similar to what the agency has, but they're a little bit less extreme, right? So for that, I put recognition and reputation instead of fame and notoriety. So once you've gone through this whole exercise of listing out these stakeholder groups, listing out all of the potential benefits and harms you can think of, and it's really helpful to do in a group setting because everybody gets ideas and the ideas spark other ideas, is then you can list all of these out. And I've made an alphabetized list. Don't do this. Just if you're working with a group, just list this stuff out on a piece of paper. You may have it listed as you're doing the work, and that's great. You can just work from there. This can be very messy. But just for the purposes of a PowerPoint, I've listed them all out. And you can start seeing, you can read through these, and you can start seeing that there's some potential conflicts happening here, for sure. Humanization and notoriety, those two values, can be very difficult to make them coexist, right? Fame and reputation can be a very tricky tension there. Change and status quo or sustainability or stability, there could be a value tension there that's happening. Earning and philanthropy are also two tensions. I actually think this is the tension that was surfacing when the shelter was trying to control how much money that the people could earn every day. Some people didn't understand why they were doing that, and they're coming from a philanthropic viewpoint as opposed to wanting these people to just earn as much money as possible. Are there any other value conflicts that you see here? Yes, absolutely. Innovation can be very uncomfortable. So, but you can see how this starts to surface some things that you may not have noticed before, where there may be different people that are going to be using or accessing or viewing your product or your offering or your service. And this gets at a new way of looking at how they may be viewing that. So the last step is you take this information and you integrate it into your design strategy. So in this case, I think we've identified a couple of things just through this, where there's an issue happening with the way the shelter is dealing with the money. There's an issue with this tension about this agency sort of seeking attention, but there actually being a real social problem that's happening. And there's this problem between the humanization and the notoriety. And to me, that one is the strongest one. And that one is the one that that t-shirt that says, "I'm a homeless hotspot," instead of "I'm a person providing a service," really, I think, bothered people a lot. That tension felt very uncomfortable for people. So hopefully by doing this exercise, then you're able to integrate these considerations into your design work. So the last thing I want to talk about is I want to encourage you to try this at home. So you can take this group of people, you can have them on a whiteboard, you can split people into teams. You want to have at least two people doing this. This isn't a solo exercise. It just, you don't get as much out of it that way. The more cross-discipline you can get in your organization with people talking about this, the more involvement you get, the more people you get caring about values. Again, I'm just starting this. I started at WebMD 6 months ago, so this is sort of a process that I'm just started working with my team. Another thing that works really well is just getting people sitting down with a piece of paper. The main thing is that there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's just to get people talking about these issues so that you can make better decisions and you can engage users in a more positive way. And I want to thank you all for your time. I hope you found this helpful, and I enjoyed sharing it with you. And I welcome questions from you all, and I'd like to ask you a question as well, which is, now that you know about this methodology, if you didn't know about it before, how do you think you might be able to utilize it in your practice? And is there any thoughts or ideas you'd like on how to do that? Thanks. Yes. Can you go to the, they've asked me to ask people to go to the mic.
Okay, so to this question, how might we use this? So we're looking at a relationship. So at Rackspace, we're looking at a relationship between us or our, we and our products mm-hmm. and our customers' clients, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at the value exchange as we have to look at it as two parties. We can't just look at what value they derive or what
right.
we invest.
Right.
So I wonder if you ever work with it in pairs where you're looking intentionally at the exchange. I mean, it seems like it's set up almost too, but I'd like to hear you talk about whether you look at it as an exchange between parties and more of an active exchange, especially if that's ongoing or has to be renegotiated at some point.
Let me just ask you to clarify. Do you mean an exchange between, so having two groups sit down and exchange this information with each other?
No, I mean there is a value exchange around why do you use this product?
Right.
Why do we provide this product? So I'm thinking like around those values that people are exchanging. I guess we're looking at it not so much from monetary value, but mm-hmm. what different motivations do they have? You know, like going through a mental model exercise with all of our clients, we
right.
have a very broad amount or broad group of statements.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are a lot of values in there that are not just business values, mm-hmm. but they're really motivating factors and behavioral qualities and emotions and things like that.
I think especially when we start applying this to business cases, that kind of exchange that you're talking about comes up a lot. I know a lot of the work that I'm doing is our users really value privacy and trust. And some of the things that I think we and a lot of online providers would like to have more data and would like to be able to have this value of having access and data from our users, whereas our users may want us to give them more privacy and be able to trust us more with that. So that's absolutely a tension that comes up a lot, especially if you're an information provider or you're doing e-commerce. So I think this methodology really, it hasn't been applied a lot to that type of problem, but I think there's a lot of richness there that can be explored. Hey, John.
Hey, so I work for the government and we don't have a profit motive. So I see this as being like a really useful structure for us mm-hmm. to sort of have the conversations that we try to have anyway.
Right.
What I'm sort of interested in is, and you say you've been doing this for about 6 months. Do you just do this?
No, I've been in my position for six mm-hmm. months, so working this process
right.
in is like
have you had struggles with getting like the non-design folks to engage with this? I'm just sort of like, I think I'm going to try this, and it's a question of, do I want to ease them in? Do I want to like throw them in a room and not let them out until we're done?
So far, everybody's been really excited about it because it gives, when you run a design studio or a workshop like this where everybody is getting to kind of say what they think and nobody's the expert in the room,
mm-hmm.
I actually find it helps reduce tensions between, in my work, it's mostly the tensions are between the design group, the product group, and the dev group. And so if I get these people in a room together and they're sort of on an even playing field, it actually helps. So I haven't felt that I needed to ease anybody into it. They seem to be kind of excited to be at the table with the designers playing around with these ideas. And they don't feel like they don't need to sketch or do anything, right? They can just talk. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Hey.
Hi. So I'm curious of the goal of working through these, because mm-hmm. it obviously lead to a lot of rich discussion. Mm-hmm. Do you find that through the discussion, the goal is to kind of achieve an equilibrium from a design perspective of what comes out of that discussion, you know, kind of find the lowest common denominator? Or do you find that some stakeholder groups' values carry more weight than others in a given context?
That's part of what this helps surface, because in certain situations, depending on how the money is flowing or what the situation is, you have to give the values of a certain group precedence over others. But if you don't know what those values are and you're just making decisions based on where the money's coming from and you don't see these tensions, you can make mistakes. So the idea is even though you may not be able to satisfy or get an equilibrium across values, that you've at least examined them and made informed decisions about where you're making choices. Anyone else? Thank you all so much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the 2012 IA Summit. The IA Summit podcasts are sponsored by the UIE Virtual Seminar Program, with scores of online seminars your team can access on demand. For free access to a virtual seminar, visit uie.com/IAS12. And you can find the rest of the IA Summit podcasts at library.iasummit.org.